So I thought I'd start by talking a little bit, since it's a baptism, about what it's like when you first become a parent. Okay? So maybe you're going through it right now. Maybe you're getting to watch someone go through it. Lucky you. Put your hands up if you find parenting a challenge or you remember parenting being hard. Good, you're with me? Good, we're on the same page, all right. At one point in your life, your underwear drawer wasn't swimming with bits of Lego. Maybe when you wanted to leave the house, you simply opened the door and stepped over the threshold and left, minus the 10 to 20 minutes negotiation of which object would cross the threshold with you if you'd been to the toilet, and bribery to put a pair of shoes on. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Or maybe you remember getting to eat your breakfast in perfect morning peace on your own without the wee voice saying, "Mummy, Daddy, Mummy." Yeah, being a parent is really hard work. It's like stepping into like a TARDIS of craziness. You don't know how big it is until you step in. It's way bigger than you ever thought, way crazier than you ever imagined, and quite frankly, it's sometimes not always fun. Being a parent is really hard work. And I'm going to say it again. Being a parent is really hard work. Oof, I'm exhausted. Don't know about you. So if you're feeling exhausted, you know what I feel like looking after two boys. At one point, you could shut your front door on the needs of the world, and they stayed out there. But now, you shut your front door at night and you come in, and the needs of the world are in your living room 24/7. And hopefully they're sleeping for some of those hours. But it is, it's quite tiring. And that all sounds fairly negative, and it would be if that's all it was. But when you have another person's needs before you, like no other point in your life thus far, you get to experience what I'm going to call a holy stretching of your capacity to love. Every single day, you get choices in the moment, what you're going to do. And I've made a list of all the different choices I've got to make each day. Right. In this moment, do I protect, encourage, shout, clothe, discipline, manipulate, demand, perfect, influence, control, empathize, nourish, neglect, be present, offer compassion, ignore, understand, listen. It's like a child comes to us to be our mirror and shows us just what we're really like. And on our good days, we wouldn't mind so much, would we? But let's face it, on our bad days, when we're tired and we're at the end of our rope of patience, sometimes they show us what we don't want to see about ourselves. They expose our imperfections. I don't know about you, but I like to sneak into my children's rooms at night when they're lying there and they don't need me and they're quiet. And I can appreciate their smallness and their frailty again. And something inside me wakes up to my deepest longing of the kind of person that I wish I could be for them. And I apologize. And in that moment, I get some sort of clarity that I've not had before. It doesn't have to be a child. Anybody we love really deeply can offer us a reflection of what we're really like. Any human being can be our mirror. Now, we read in the scriptures this morning that there's a metaphor in the Jewish and the Christian scriptures which describes a creator that decided to make humanity in his image or in his reflection. It was first recorded in a creation poem. Notice I did not say science book. Genesis was never meant to be a scientific exposé on the beginnings of humanity. Genesis was firstly a poem, and the writer was trying to explain something deeply mysterious about what he understood about humanity. There was something intrinsically divine and special in the human race. It said that humanity was the very image, reflection, impression, likeness of God. Imagine a fingerprint. Humanity is not the fingerprint, but it's the mark that it leaves behind. It's the divine impression that's on all of us, all over the planet. So guys, this is our original calling and purpose. We're meant to be a fleshy, beating heart impression of the living God. And that's why we better make sure that if we say we love God, that we go on some sort of journey to understand who God is in his deepest nature. Otherwise, we could reflect all kinds of rubbish. We must make sure that we reflect love itself. Now, there are moments in our life, I'm going to move a wee bit, when we get to experience or be reminded of this divine impression that's in the human race. And I had a moment like that a few weeks ago when I was sitting with someone very special on my knee. And since a picture says more than 1,000 words, I'd like to show you a picture this morning. And I'd like you to let the picture do something to your insides, because it's meant to. Biologically, naturally, this person is meant to disturb you in a good way. This is Abby. Isn't she gorgeous? Just take a few moments just to be quiet and have a look at her. Abby, yeah. Hasn't she got the most incredible gift? When she looks at you, she stares deep down inside you with such openness, such acceptance, and interest. When she looks at you, it's like she's looking at a human being for the very first time. She sees you, she takes you all in, and she's got this most incredible peace in her eyes, and she has the most beautiful stillness in her body. And when she looked at me that day, I felt like what it must be like to be looked at, something otherworldly, by something divine itself. She preaches the image of God right back at me. She reminds me that there's something in humanity that I've obviously forgotten, and I need to waken up. The day I took that picture, Abby was like a mirror reflecting God to me. And I'll always keep that wee picture on my phone of her. She's gorgeous. You make beautiful kids, Lauren and John. So here's a wee question. Why is it that children do that to us? Why is it? Why have they got this ability? Is it because there's no kind of offence between us? There's no shame between me and Abby? No expectations? No demands made of me? No second guessing each other, no judgment, just a gaze. She's completely disarming. Think about how hard it is to look intently into the eyes of someone that you know really well. Imagine a colleague, maybe a best friend, maybe a lover. There's all kinds of motives, concerns, and words floating around in our mind, and sometimes that makes the gaze pretty fleeting, or maybe a wee bit uncomfortable if it lasts too long. You know what I'm talking about? Or try and imagine looking into eyes of someone that's hurt you or that you hate. It's almost impossible, isn't it? It's almost really impossible to meet that person's eyes. And it follows then that we very rarely get opportunities as human people to take in what a wonderful mystery it is to behold another human being and their intrinsic value. And I think it dulls us. It dulls us. How special a human being actually is. Awareness of this divine imprint on humanity is something that Jesus really wanted to wake us up to. He really did. He said that he was living like a perfect expression of God. He even said, if you've seen me, you've seen God. He was trying to live like a mirror to God. And he once told a story about sheep and goats that we heard this morning. Now, the gospel writer includes this story in a group of three stories. And this story in particular has been interpreted in isolation from the rest of the surrounding stories. And it's been taken literally and solely to explain what God will do in the end. The trouble is, when you read the story this way, you miss the point. Jesus was telling three different stories. Therefore, it follows that we can't take one of these stories literally. That was never the intention. Matthew grouped them together and he was employing a literary tool to punch at something, right? You've also got to know that Jesus was a complete radical. I hope you know that, right? And he was most often found critiquing his own religion. He would often tell stories that had a particular shock factor to them. And if you look for the shock factor in the story, you find what Jesus was meaning or what he was punching at. Here, in this story, the Jewish audience would not have been in the least bit surprised about a God on a throne dividing who was righteous and unrighteous. That wouldn't have shocked them. The shock was where God was in the story and what that meant about who was righteous. What a surprise for them to discover that the God that they decided to put on a throne had chosen to identify with the most vulnerable, poor, ritually unclean, and unlawful. What a shock that all the effort they'd been putting into being ritually clean and law-keeping had actually placed them on the other side of a padlocked door that they had reserved for everybody else. I hope you feel the punch of that story. Yeah, this story is shocking. It's punchy, the language is punchy, and that's the point. It's meant to make us feel uncomfortable. So often religious communities, and I'm going to say Christians, and I'm going to apologise for this, quite often like to draw really neat lines about who's in and who's out, who's good and who's bad, who God is pleased with and who God is not pleased with. And quite frankly, that is bad religion. Jesus was inviting us into a deeper awareness of our deepest calling in God. He wanted to recognise that creation is marked with a divine imprint, and in some mysterious ways, it's even more potent when that creation is suffering. And if we don't go to the vulnerable, and if we don't associate with a social outcast, we will miss God, we will miss encounters with God, and we will not serve him. And what a shame that would be. Here is a question for you. Do you need Jesus to mess with your religion? Do you need Jesus to blur your lines? We need to waken up and see that God can't be loved separately on some sort of throne up there when he decided to get off the throne. The deepest expression of love to God is how we love humanity, our neighbours, strangers, people in poverty, the sick, even our enemies. And I reckon if the global church were to wake up to this priority, perhaps they would have some sort of basis or reputation to be worthy of being listened to. But until then, our worship will be lacking. In extreme cases, it's actually hypocrisy. Jesus told this story. Matthew wrote it down, and we get to read it so that we can waken up and see it's the very act of loving our fellow human beings that is the greatest and truest fulfillment of that first commandment, which is to love God. You were made in love. You were created for love. And when you act in love, you are true to your deepest identity. You are a mirror to God. Now I'm going to finish, but firstly, I just want to mention three areas that this should be transformational in. Firstly, parenting, okay? I'm all about the parenting at the minute. It would really transform the value we place on being a mum or a dad. It's one of our deepest callings as a human being to love a child. And let me ask you this question. When has anyone ever entered your world so naked, hungry, thirsty, vulnerable, helpless, homeless, than a newborn baby? Maybe that's why we can see the face of God in Abby, Akash, Mia, Aria, and Miles. And I don't know the name of your wee baby, and I feel awful, so can you shout me the name? Ailey. Katie. We don't need to feel or put pressure on ourselves as parents that there's anything more that we should be doing other than parenting these small people. It's really hard work. It's all-consuming. Nod your heads, please. And it's precious. They're one of the main works of our life. They are the deepest expression of our worship. And in a radical way, like no other time in our lives before, we encounter what life is about. Guess what? It's not about us. It's about the other. And that is the truest form of love. And that's why I describe parenting as a holy stretching. And by the way, it's not always comfortable, is it? So I just want to say a big thank you to all the parents with us this morning. You were worshiping God, and you might not have known it. You have hosted God in your homes, and you might have been unaware of it. And then secondly, the church. Right, see if this church was to take this story seriously. It would mean we'd be way less concerned about what was happening on a Sunday morning, and if we liked it or not, and we'd be way more concerned if we'd fed everybody who was hungry in East Calder and Kirk Newton. If anybody couldn't buy clothes, we would have bought them. If somebody was sick, we would have visited them. And if somebody from East Caldwyn couldn't and end up in prison, we would be the first people to go and visit them. It's clarifying, isn't it? What a story. We would stop being so obsessed about serving the people that believe the same stuff as us. We'd be more concerned about serving people because we believe they're made of the same stuff as us. They're made in the image of God. And with this new clarity, I reckon we could rid the church of hypocrisy. And lastly, politics. It's no new thing, is it? Politics is obsessed at the minute with money, power, and status. It serves the big people at the top, it ignores the little people on the ground, and we have put up with it as a nation, just accepting that this is how it's going to be. What a shame. What if we could transform politics to live up to its truest calling to govern the people well? Or let's just say, for the sake of today, to govern the very image of God well. Maybe Christians would be a little bit more involved. What if policies became so concerned with the people on the ground that the immigrant was given land, the homeless were given a home, and policies that actually lifted people out of poverty were put in place? What if Jesus took a seat in the Scottish Parliament in the form of you? What if you became a radical and defied your cultural norms to critique society, just like Jesus did? What if money wasn't the focus, but love of your neighbour was? As Bishop Michael Curry said in that sermon at the Royal Wedding, if you remember it, if love was the way, the whole earth could be a sanctuary. Let me finish. You were made in love by love itself. You were created for love, and when you act in love, you are true to your deepest identity. You are a mirror to God. You are a mirror to love. You are the image of God. Amen.